Thanks, Dr. Allen. I want to express apology on the behalf of Dr. Lal, since he cannot make it for some reasons. So I want to present on soil carbon sequestration and ecosystem services. I want to talk about a little bit soil and its environmental first. So I want to talk about the critical zone, the pedosphere, which is the foundation of this critical zone, which represents the geomembranes across which water, solute, gases, liquid, and organisms, they are exchanged with the biosphere, hydrosphere, atmosphere, and lithosphere. This critical zone just starts from the vegetation bottom up to aquifer bottom, and it's divided into ground surface, soil's root zone, vadose zone, and ground water zone. So what are the ecosystem services? These are the multitude of resources and benefits that are supplied by the natural ecosystem. The clean air which we breathe, the water which we drink, all are provided by the natural ecosystem that we take for them as a granted. Soil provides various ecosystem services. It provides food, feed, fiber, water, raw material, and pharmaceutical, global food security, climate stabilization, climate adaptation and mitigation, aesthetic and cultural, societal, it has some societal, provides some societal values, ecological, net primary productivity, biodiversity, and all these are interlinked with each other. So some ecosystem services which are provided by the soils, I want to talk about the five. The first one is carbon sequestration. Carbon sequestration is defined as the capture and secure storage of atmospheric carbon using biological, geochemical, there are so many methods to sequester the carbon that would otherwise be emitted or retained in the atmosphere. So why this carbon sequestration is important? So because we know that there are no yet known carbon fuel sources. So every source are emitting some kind of carbon. So there is a need to stabilize the atmosphere sink and sources in the atmosphere to stabilize the carbon dioxide. Hence, we must restore or improve the ecosystem services and advance the global food security. So I'm going to talk about the terrestrial carbon pool. So component of this carbon pool is divided into forest carbon and soil pedology carbon. I think most of you have known that the total amount of carbon pool present is 2500 petagram. Again, it's further divided into organic carbon and soil inorganic carbon. So organic carbon again further divided into passive fraction, which is is more stable and less affected by the management practices. This is and turnover period is more than 2500 years, and this is in maybe what 25 to 30 years, and it's also least effective. But this is the fraction which are more likely interested. The capacity of the soil to provide the nutrients based on this labile fraction which is active, and this is highly affected by the management. And we are more interested in the carbon sequestration for this part. And soil inorganic carbon, we are more in pedogenic carbonates, which are when carbonic acid, they are reacting with the calcium and magnesium, and when with the help of irrigation, they are least down in the soil profile and helps in the soil in the carbon sequestration. On the other hand, forest carbon also contribute the above ground biomass, detritus material, and terrestrial carbon pool. So soil carbon sequestration, as I said before, it refers to the process of restoring depleted soil carbon through recommended land use practices. And potential of soil carbon sequestration in the global is the cropland has highest, it's 0.4 to 1.4 petagram carbon per year. all this grazing land has little bit less, and salt factory soils and desertified soils so lesser as compared to crop lands. Sink capacity of land waste sinks through biosequestration. The permanent forest has a maximum about 200 to 300 petagram carbon, whereas soils have 50 to 100. And it has been reported that drawdown of at the end of the early 21st of century, the drawdown, this carbon pool has been decreased by 50 parts per billion. Parts per million. So second is climate change moderation. I'm going to show you this graph, soil and climate change mitigation. It's taken from the Hansen and his colleagues in 2008. These guys estimated that by the end of 2150, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is going to reduce by 50 parts per million. And how is they going to reduce this? They say, like, if we improve the sequestration in forestry and soil and capture the carbon dioxide which is emitted through the power plants, we can reduce this emission. Also, there is another possibility to make more preference for the biofuels in associated with the biochar so that we can raise this number, like 50, we can reduce this emission by 50 parts per million, and that by the target is in 2150, the concentration of carbon dioxide will be less than 350 parts per million. Water storage and purification. The distribution of global water is the fresh water contains about 2.5% of the total Earth's water, and out of this 2.5%, 0.3% is the total surface water, which contains about fresh. This water is contained by the lakes and rivers, and most of the rest of the 70% is in the glaciers and permanent snow cover, and this is occupied as a salt water. And the groundwater is less than 30%. So this water has been depleted continually. And the humans and water, you can see here, the global water withdrawal now exceeds about 3,900 cubic kilometer, or 10% of the total renewable water. And humans now use 50% of the fresh water, and most of it used for the agriculture purposes. And irrigation may increase the precipitation in the dry regions, or deforestation may decrease precipitation in the humid regions. Again, inland water are greatly diminished. Aquatic ecosystem have been affected by this terrestrial ecosystem, and fossil non-renewable groundwater is being depleted. So, with the advance of population, you can see here the world irrigated area has been tremendously increased from 100 in 1950 to over 280 in 2002. And you can see here, this because of the lot of people, we need to meet the food demand of the global food population. So this area, irrigated area, has been increased. In 2000, 2.3 billion people live in a river basin with water stress, or per capita annual water availability is less than 1,700 cubic meter. Whereas in 2025, it was predicted that 3.5 billion people, or 48% of the world population, will live in water-stressed river basins. Mining groundwater. India uses about 200 cubic kilometer of groundwater for irrigation annually, and this is about 3 times the flow of the China's Yellow River annually, and this is the, I think, 6th largest river in the world. And it may be prudent to find alternatives to growing rice and wheat in drought-prone regions so that we can save little water. You can see here the climate change and water resources by 2050. These are the regions which are going to affect the rainfall as well as temperature. The Sahara region will affect the highest, about 25% increase in the precipitation and in ranges from minus 5 to negative 15 in summer, and you can see a number here in the winter. As compared to in Aral Sea Basin, the summer plus 5 to positive 10%. So this is the effect of the climate change. This is the prediction. So water use in agriculture. Food crops use most of the water, and for the they evaporate about 7100 cubic kilometer per year. And whereas irrigation water use is only 2650 cubic kilometer per year. So water shortage is expected to worsen by 2030 in Western Asia, Arabian Peninsula, and all these countries, including Central South America. This graph shows the number of African countries affected by the drought between 1970 and 2004, where you can see here in 1983, the number was the highest. Fourth one is biodiversity. This graph shows the appropriation of net primary production by humans. Like, this is affected by the amount of area used by humans and the land use intensity. And it estimates the how much these systems are affecting the net primary productivity, like the land use conversion and how they are affecting the biomass harvest. So you can see biomass harvest affect about 8.3 petagram carbon, land use and change affect about 6.2, and human-induced fires affect about 1.1 petagram carbon. Shows that loss of biodiversity is 100 to 1,000 times now than before human intervention, and at present, threatened species among the remaining include only 11% of birds, 18% mammals, 5% fish, and 8% plants. And land use change is the most important cause of this extinction. So these are complex species on the earth. It has published in the Science that 8.7 million complex species are present on the earth. And soil and gene pool. Soil is a principal reservoir of the gene pool. Improvement of soil quality enhances the biodiversity both above and below ground. This figure shows the global food insecurity is published in a FAO report in 2009, whereas World Food Service, they have targeted that number of hungry people, their target was to reduce less than about 480 million by 2050. But the actual number was different. We found that 2020, these are the number of hungry people because of the food insecurity and so many disturbed ecosystem services. This carbon soil organic carbon pool is related with the wheat yield, is affecting the wheat yield, and this data has been taken from this publication. This shows that soil organic carbon, when it decreased by 1 megagram per hectare, the reduction in the wheat yield was found about 40 kilogram per hectare. And food production in low developing countries by increasing the soil organic pool by 1 ton per hectare, you can see here the cereals, the production increased by from 20 to 37. Whereas in legumes and tubers, you can see the number here varies from 2 to 3 and 7 to 11.3 megagram per year. So this is a strategy that must be discussed in Earth meeting next year in June. So global food demand in 21st century, the hunger-related death toll is 24,000 per day. And the global food demand would double over the period 1990 to 2030 and increase by 70% between 2010 and 2050. And this would involve 3 to 4 times increase in the poorest countries. And there have been severe droughts in Amazon in 2010, China in 2011, and West Africa in 2011. And in Africa and Asia, the plant-derived food requirements may increase by a factor of about 2.5 to 7 in some countries. So required cereal yields and production to meet future demands, so we need about 3.27, and by 2050 we need about 4.30, but the production we need 3,200. This shows the graph of how we are utilizing the resources, and they are depleting over time. This shows the Howard graph where the net phosphorus production in 1990 shows the increase, and eventually it's going to decrease by 2100 century. But five countries, these are the countries which controls about 90% of the phosphorus reserves. We have their high or low causes, some anoxia and the coastal ecosystem. So we need to manage these nutrients. We need to improve the nutrient use efficiency and recycle and reuse the nutrients to meet the food requirement of the people. And invasion of the blue planet by Homo sapiens. To live in harmony and symbiosis with the planet Earth, we must revisit our collective societal values. And the statement taken from Stevenson says that nature is neutral. Man has wrested from nature the power to make the world a desert or to make the desert bloom. Thank you. Thanks for your patience. I think I talked to Lal. He said his number is about 110. I read his paper in Food Security, Food Policy. He just published this paper, and but personally, I don't know. Maybe I don't think so because of the this climate change effect. So many emissions. We have to do a lot with how much, what population, everything. Like you can see the number here. The emission as compared to in maybe one decade before, the number is huge different. In some papers they read that by the 2050 this carbon emission gonna be increased maybe 50 or 60. So in this paper, actually in Hansen and et al. In 2008, they are saying that if we can reserve this soil carbon sequestration in forestry and we use biofuel and with the biochar, also in the same paper they have also concluded that if we don't use that, so we're not gonna make this number. So we'll see. I think in all what we are recommending that we are working on more, we are focusing on this terrestrial carbon pool. So we are recommending this new project I am working on, which is like we are using this no-till practices, no-till farming. But we compare the no-till farming, sometimes we don't feel the good result as compared to the plow-till if we don't use this no-till farming effectively. So this project mostly we are showing that we have to use some kind of cover crops plus manure and longer term duration, only then we can, if we can use some kind of carbon sequestration, also use of biochar. And since you know that ethanol production in the Midwest is pretty high, so if we are taking the residue from the ground and making the ethanol production, so then even then the no-till farming is not suitable and it's not well as compared to the plow-till. So we recommend the at least in Midwestern region we are focusing on to use no-till farming, which conserves the more soil moisture and rotate with the cover crops and plus manure application. That may be the one possibility. There are some others, but I can recommend only this is the can be one option. Yes.
On your slide, you showed a slide with wheat yield and organic matter, soil organic matter.
Yeah. Yes, this data, sorry I didn't mention, this data has been taken from the dry climate region, so that's the reason. Yes, you're right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.